a business, let a weed store be a weed store kind of thing, is applying here, and I think it would help simplify the language. And that's all I have to say today.
Thank you very much.
And we'll have staff come back and clarify their rules.
Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners and mayor. My name is Brad Zussman. I am the co-owner with my wife of Canadaddy's Wellness Center on 169th and Division. I'm here to talk about two different items. One is the 1,000-foot rule. In my existing dispensary, I've put about $180,000 in it. In my new dispensary that I'm building across the street, I will have over $600,000 in it after I do all the city improvements for new sidewalks and doing everything there. My concern right now is that I was doing this in the intentions that medicinal was going to be in one building and recreational was going to be an additional building. I'm willing to take the loss of one of my dispensaries of $180,000, but the new one that I'm building right now will not be complete for about four more months. My concern right now here is that if someone came in and I left my lease in my other building and moved over to my new building, then they hit me, and they hit me by about 2 seconds on the application. Does that mean that I lose $600,000 that I built out in my other location? Also, the other thing I really want to discuss about is my team members that I have. When we first started in 2014, we had three team members. In my cannabis businesses right now, I have 52 that I built up in 18 months. That's 52 families that would be out on the street based on some of the amendments that are out right now. And I've worked real hard with my family and my team to get to this level. And I feel that we owe it to my team members and the community to be able to run our businesses and let the saturation feel its way out. I've learned in business here that there are successful dispensaries and there are dispensaries that have just been hanging on for recreational. Those will most likely, some will succeed, some will fail. I think that's going to be based on the operator itself. I also have a restaurant that's located in a 200 market building that I've been there for 18 years, and I have 12 employees there. My employees in my dispensary make an average of $3 to $5 more an hour than people that I've been working with me for 18 years. So there is definitely a better cost of living for cannabis, and I think that needs to be taken into accountability.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Welcome.
Hello, Commissioners. Mayor Hales, thank you very much for hearing me. My name is Jesse Horton. I'm co-owner of Panacea, a licensed dispensary in Portland, Oregon, Sandy Boulevard. I'm also owner of Panacea Valley Gardens, which is a cultivation facility here in Portland, Oregon. Also, I come to you representing the organization that I co-founded called the Minority Cannabis Business Association that's focused on bringing more women and minorities into the industry via economic empowerment, social justice, and patient awareness, consumer awareness causes. I just want to come to you today and, you know, kind of just impress on these amendments that I do support the intention of the amendments. However, I think maybe the language could be cleaned up, as a number of lawyers have mentioned today. I think we have a unique opportunity within this industry to start not just a new industry, but a better industry. This industry can do amazing things for uplift, of course, for people, but also for social justice causes, and we can't, you know, forget about that. However, it also does have to make sense from an economic standpoint. For years and years, minorities have been negatively impacted and specifically targeted as a regard to the war on drugs. This has had a great detrimental impact in minorities' ability to get into this industry. Of course, when we look at things like lack of capital, that's something that I think someone else mentioned. A lot of people are in the same boat. We look at things like legal issues, of course, people being excluded because of certain felonies or things like that, which I think makes a difference as well. But I think far more great an impact that the war of drugs has had, or the war on drugs has had on the community, has been a psychological impact, in that we have a lot less faith in law enforcement, a lot less faith in government to treat us equally. And I think that there's a lot of statistics, a lot of things that back that up, specifically a number of studies that shows exactly what I'm saying. And I think what you're seeing now within the cannabis industry is you're seeing minorities, people of color, and even some women. I think Oregon has done an excellent job as regards to women. However, you're seeing them say, hey, I'm going to sit back and wait. You know, I know that if I get into this industry, I'm most likely going to be the one who gets targeted first. I'm most likely going to be treated unfairly because we're in an industry that is so affected by legal issues. I mean, we all know federally we're all doing something that's illegal, and that plays a large impact on the effect of minorities who want and have the ability to get into it. And I think in regard to this 1,000-foot barrier, I would like to speak to the gentleman earlier that said there's 700 dispensary locations in Oregon. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I spent a year of my time going around to locations trying to find a dispensary, dealing with these 1,000-foot barriers, finding one that was open, but it was 995 feet away from another. And that greatly impacted my ability. I had to find different ways to get into the industry, and ultimately I was able to find partners who were able to accept me into this, into their dispensary. However, I just want to specifically speak on, we have to do whatever we can to open up more opportunity for minorities to get into this industry. And I think that the amendment that has been presented earlier does that. I think the grandfathering clause not only opens up the ability for other women and minority entrepreneurs to get into the industry and uplift the industry, but it also prevents the land grab, which I've heard a number of times, and I've seen a lot of people. I spend a lot of times in a lot of different conferences nationwide. People who want to get in Oregon, they're dying to get in Oregon, and people who have spent so much money just to be in that specific position. And not only is it hurting minorities and women, but it's also hurting Oregonians as a whole. So I would also, I think, agree with Commissioner Saltzman in that the 1,000-foot barrier is going to help with the saturation in a sense, but in another sense, it's going to hurt with the ability to uplift the market and bring in new entrepreneurs that are going to take it to a new level. And it's also going to hurt the ability for minority and women entrepreneurs to get in and make a bigger impact.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Okay, did we get everyone who wanted to speak up here? So let's bring staff back up, please. For questions and guidance.
Where would you like us to start?
There was the specific question about dispensaries who are hoping to sell at midnight tonight. Is that allowed?
Right. So, and my guidance to medical dispensaries that have called us with that, as it is currently within our regulations, even if they were adopted today, they're not technically licensees at this point. However, those regulations have been developed, as you have heard, through a pretty robust public process that involved industry, that involved community members. Those were the established thresholds and expectations of our city. And so my recommendation to them has been to be true to the spirit of that process and to the integration of their industry into Portland communities. These regulations are, and as of October 1st, are meant to be informative, not punitive. When we do have to use enforcement to get people into line, once the system is up and running completely and we know what that system is going to look like with your direction, then we will be able to more target our enforcement. But we're hoping that at this point, the process that we've engaged in will lead the industry to behave responsibly.
Alex, any other questions for staff?
I have a question. The gentleman who testified that the 7 to 9 hours of operation would significantly cut into his business because of his customers' preferences. Can you just remind us again how we settled on 7 to 9 and what your thinking, what your reaction is to maybe moving it from 7 to midnight? What are the pluses and minuses?
So there are some concerns with later evening hours, a couple of different ones. One is that it does restricting access is a well-known strategy within the social sciences to restrict access to our more vulnerable populations like youth. And the idea that they will be more likely to shoulder tap at times of the day when there are less people on the ground looking. The other major concern is the spontaneous purchases, which leads to DUII. And that's a major concern for us, especially as we don't know what exactly the interaction between alcohol and marijuana may be, and people are more likely to have consumed alcohol later into the evening. The percentage of people driving under the influence of alcohol goes up as it gets later into the day. And so that was designed to, and also liquor stores' hours of operation are also designed to reduce the potential for spontaneous purchases late at night when people maybe have already consumed other substances. The other portion of that, too, is livability of neighborhoods. We've heard a lot from Washington and Colorado that these locations are destination spots, meaning people come from all over, they park, there's trash, there's noise. So landing on the 9 o'clock hour was designed to sort of give neighbors some respite from that.
And in addition to that, we did hear from at the town hall that we had at the Rosewood Neighborhood Initiative, there were a lot of concerns from parents and youth in terms of the access to youth and how that impacts families in terms of these dispensaries or potential retailers, how that would actually play in the community and what that does. And it brings undesired impacts in terms of the safety and the livability of the neighborhoods.
I'm just reminded, though, that the same logic might apply to a bar, and you can go to a bar up to 2 in the morning, and it might be a spontaneous act as well. So I am concerned, since equity has been framed as a major consideration, mm-hmm. I guess we should be concerned about whether there's an equity argument that expanding the hours gives people that are working long shifts or have family considerations a chance to get their medical needs met because 9 to 5 doesn't work for them. I don't know how that breaks as an equity matter, but it's been framed as an issue.
I'd certainly be willing to consider that in the ongoing process. That potentially when we do have two clear ways of going, that we could have different rules for medical dispensaries, just like their 24-hour pharmacies. But the bars close at a certain time. That's certainly something that we could look at. For right now, we did, as Victor said, we heard a lot of concern from community members. We've heard a lot today and at previous hearings from industry representatives. At the community meetings, we heard a lot more from neighbors who were wanting to be proactive about preventing some of the issues that we currently have with alcohol use in neighborhoods and with bars that are loud and noisy till 2 o'clock in the morning.
So I guess if I'm going to support something today, I guess I need the amendment and the alternative language that was proposed by Amy Margulis on the siting, that we don't draw a distinction between medical and retail. We just say 1,000 feet. So okay, that's what I need.
Walk us through the difference between the two.
Also, let's
get Ben Walters. Let's
bring Ben up.
I thought we were already there.
I thought we were, too.
No, that's not what we're
So. Ben Walters with the City Attorney's Office. As I understand the proposed amendment that was submitted by industry today, and this is the first time I've had an opportunity to look at it, they're proposing to amend the definition of what would be licensed and collapse it down to a single a single entity covering both the licenses granted by the OHA and by the OLCC. And as drafted, because they are two, at the state level, two different regulatory schemes, we had drafted our regulations to be consistent with and parallel to the state scheme. So this would be a departure from trying to follow the state scheme in terms of the two parallel regulatory programs. There may be a time when the state decides that they will collapse them down to one, and at that time we could track that and come back in and say we're going to emulate what the state is doing. Besides which, they then say that you would strike the definition of medical dispensary and replace it throughout the ordinance with marijuana retailers. Again, I did not get a chance to see this before. I would have to go through the entire ordinance and think through what the implications would be in that regard. And then they go through the minimum standards and modify those as well. So that would be the implications. My recommendation as legal counsel to the council would be that we, for now at least, track the state system of having two types of licensees and following the state until such time as the state says we're going in a different direction.
Well, I mean, we always take pride in Portland sort of nudging the state to do things. So, you know, paid sick leave or minimum wage. So there's a short session coming up. You know, I'm a betting person, and I bet the state is going to revisit this whole scheme of having OHA versus OLCC, and maybe we help take them there.
Well, that's up to council. That's a political choice for the council to make, but for now at least, the program that we're setting up tracks with the state system that's in place and is anticipated to be in place for the foreseeable future.
This fundamentally changes the whole ordinance. We can't just make this change and not look at the rest of it.
So, Mayor,
I'm perfectly happy if you want to set this over and try to get it right. And I'm not saying you did it wrong, but I'm just saying respond to some of the concerns we've heard today,
right,
which I think are legitimate concerns.
So
I'm willing to take more time on this.
So I think that the primary concern that I have heard, and correct me if you've heard something different, is that existing medical dispensaries will not be able to wholesalely stake out their claim in Portland for their 1,000-foot if they choose to go recreational at some point. So we did prepare a few scenarios for council to take a look at what this looks like on the ground, and if you're interested in those, we can show those.
Yes, I'd like you to show what we prepared.
Absolutely. So I'm going to switch to my colleague here. So the other thing is that if what we're concerned about is
not CERCLA.
We're not talking about Superfund today.
That's Superfund.
If what we're concerned about is the recreational versus medical, allowing opportunity within recreational while maintaining the medical, the original proposal from staff that indicated that it would be a 1,000-foot buffer between medical dispensaries and a 1,000-foot buffer between retail locations, that does get at some of those concerns while still maintaining protection for a lot of the communities when it comes to saturation, far better than we have been able to with liquor licensed establishments. And if that is something that City Council would want to entertain, given new testimony, I know that some of the same people that were testifying today about the concern about not having a grace period were the ones that also testified for the 1,000-foot cross buffer. There were also the same individuals who were testifying in to keep the state systems completely different in Salem as well. And the state legislature chose to follow that and maintain the medical system in its own silo at the same time that they're trying to figure out how OLCC is going to regulate recreational marijuana. And I think that the fact that the state legislature kept those solely different from one another is something to consider as we're moving forward and we're thinking about what the potential philosophies were behind that. I mean, the medical dispensaries serve the medical patients of Oregon. The recreational community is going to serve the recreational patients or recreational users of Oregon. It's completely different population of individuals that are going to be served. And I know because it's the same substance, it gets difficult to parcel them out. But the landscape of those two businesses may look very different. We won't know. And also, just for your information, both in Washington and Colorado did not see any kind of attrition on their medical marijuana dispensaries. They're all going very strong. So
Teresa, walk us through the PowerPoint, please.
Mayor, you would
say 12:30.
Yeah, I was hoping we would be done.
At 12:40, I'm leaving. And so just whatever you want to, however you want to handle this.
Okay, so never mind on that. I can't The proposed amendment would fundamentally change the whole of the ordinance. So that's not going to work for us to adopt that today.
Oh, can I suggest there's, I've heard three options. Let me just put them on the table for discussion. One is that we adopt what's in front of us with a binding commitment that changes will come back to us in a time certain, viewed by council, city attorney. And I mean a binding commitment, because we're ahead of, as has been pointed out, we're legislating ahead of the curve. The other is to remove the language that has caused some controversy and essentially create a void and adopt an incomplete regulatory scheme. And the third is to adopt an amendment that none of us here know what its impact is, other than it may or may not be an improvement. And I have to say, I like the instinct to improve the language, but we're trying to bring this home. And I would hate to have another unintended consequence. And if our attorney says he's not sure what this means, then I don't know what it means. And so I'm loath to do something. So for me, it comes down to either we take it out and come back and put something in that's been cooked, or do we adopt what we have with a binding commitment that someone's going to lock the door with everyone that has a concern, scrub the language, and come back to us in whatever. And I will follow the lead of my colleagues on that.
That's my preference, but since this is an emergency ordinance, we'd need Commissioner Saltzman, I think.
But I would want to have a binding commitment. It comes back with a, you know, within 3 or 4 weeks, because that's ahead of the curve, with everybody who's here, particularly the lawyers that have the wordsmithing, invited to a meeting where we close the door and we work through until everyone's been heard.
Dan, can you live with that?
Can we do it without adopting something today? How about just the binding commitment? We give you 3 or 4 weeks.
Then we don't have any regulations as of midnight.
Yeah, I think there's a reason to act today and to maintain our city's ability to be a regulator. What kind of regulator we are, how much regulation we're going to apply, what the cost is, details like ours. Obviously, you're hearing this council still interested in bearing down on those, and Dan, it may go more in the direction that you want, more liberal in its allowance for what businesses might choose to do. But for us to assert our right to regulate, I think is pretty important. And I think that's why I'd like to act today.
Charlie, would you remind me about the rules of emergency? If we had a quorum of three, can three pass an emergency, or do we need the fourth?
Four have to pass an emergency.
So we have to have the fourth. And it looks like there's three of us. We've been told we have to have something in place.
And Commissioner Novick is in the air, so that's going to help.
There are three of us who like to put it in place with a binding commitment that the final set of changes, if any, come back to us in 3 or 4 weeks. And that's the approach I would urge our colleagues.
So if we were able to, Commissioner Saltzman, set a time certain date for that, would you be willing to vote to adopt these regulations with an understanding that that's, in effect, an interim set of rules?
And, yeah, what's the binding commitment?
That the,
who's being committed to what?
We're going to schedule.
I believe the...
Don't commit me.
I believe the sense of the council is that you're directing staff, who obviously... to the extent that you're directing us to do so, it is a binding commitment from staff to respond back within a time frame, and I haven't heard a time frame identified yet. Unfortunately have a couple of other council-identified priorities that are in place and that I'm missing because of this discussion. But
4 weeks.
4 weeks would be ample amount
and
of time.
The commitment would be,
is that okay for you?
The commitment would be that there would be a meeting or two scheduled so that anybody that has specific language concerns can come in, meet with staff and council, review it with the understanding that this council does not want to have another hearing like this, and that whatever you come back to us on is the language that you can faithfully say to us has been scrubbed. Doesn't mean there won't be a critic or two, but we won't have anyone saying, I don't understand the language or haven't had a chance to test my language, and then we'll either make the change or not.
To the best of our ability, and also recognizing that there will be others who will be involved in that conversation who have the other point of view.
I agree.
Right. I understand.
But there's a difference. I don't mind the difference of opinion. I don't like arguing about abstractions. It's
highly unlikely we're going to be able to get to consensus given the changes, but yes, we'll strive to do so.
I think clarity is the goal, not necessarily consensus.
Can we also send council members and your staff the scenarios that we worked up for you?
Yes, so I'd like to go through that, but I think this is probably not the time and place. So, Dan, I would propose that we do act on this today, but your vote is your own. If we do approve it today, I'll set a time certain date of the 28th.
That's a pretty full schedule.
Well, you know, I'm less concerned about whether it's 4 weeks or 5 weeks. I mean, the fundamental dynamic is what I'm concerned about, and that dynamic is that, I mean, this amendment was raised at the first hearing we had 3 weeks ago, and I don't, you know, there doesn't seem like there's been any giving on this issue. I mean, we heard about it at our first hearing.
So
you come back in 4 or 5 weeks, and you don't need my vote anymore, and, you know, you're going to hear disproportionately, I think, from people who are, you know, lost the battle. They lost the battle about legalizing marijuana. It was approved by voters. You have people out there who still want to wish this away. And so I feel my power is diluted. It's pretty good today because I can vote no and it'll govern. But you bring something back in 4 or 5 weeks and it's going to be more just justifying your positions, I fear. And we're going to have the same testimony from people who are out there dealing with this in the real world,
hoping
to make a living, respond to the law that was approved by voters.
Fair enough. If we took the emergency clause off, you're telling us that we wouldn't have a regulatory framework in place?
No.
Not tomorrow.
Not tomorrow.
Not
in
tomorrow.
Which case, what would happen?
Unclear.
No.
Unclear.
Okay, I don't like unclear.
I mean, there's Commissioner, just as I heard Amy Margolis describe these amendments, this is something that they were working on through last night up and through this morning. So I don't know that how this could have been something that was submitted previously. I know that there were other amendments that were submitted. I don't know that these were the same.
I'm not sure she submitted language, but I know she flagged this issue at our first hearing.
And she flagged the issue of the 1,000-foot between the dispensary and retailer, which we addressed in the 23rd hearing, and actually council adopted that amendment. This is something that is different.
And Dan, in fairness, you don't really have the leverage because when we come back to review the amendments, we can strip it out again. So we're really talking about either if we fail to get to 4 right now, we won't have any regs in place. So we have to do that clear-eyed. Or effectively what we're saying, let's do a 4-week period. It's almost like there's a sunset, but the agreement will come back and review the language, and you will have a full opportunity to participate in that.
Yeah, I guess.
Or we take the emergency clause off, we vote on it next week, we have a week of free-for-all, and we have the regulations in effect in 30 days.
That
so it's in effect a 30-day free-for-all.
That I would prefer, but Dan, I guess let me reassure you as well. I think we've got a council here that actually doesn't have any Luddite leanings towards, you know, the days before the state initiative was passed. We understand this is the law. We're trying to make it work. We've made some progress in these hearings about how do we make this work for the existing businesses. Maybe not enough progress yet, but we've made some progress about the employees being able to utilize medical marijuana on the premises. We think we fixed that. We're getting closer to at least what I had in mind with the 1,000-foot perimeter and the ability to protect existing businesses that are already here and are local. I don't think we're there yet, but we're getting closer. And so we're talking about practical implementation issues rather than a philosophical divide over whether marijuana should have been legalized or not. We have some conflicting fears of business owners who aren't sure that we mean it in terms of where we're coming from on these regulations. I hope you've been reassured in these discussions, or that it will be clumsy and there'll be inadvertent, unintended consequences that will screw up their businesses. I understand that fear. Government's not always adroit. And then we have fears in neighborhoods about how disruptive these businesses are going to be. We're going to learn as we go along, obviously, on all those fronts. I want us to assert our ability to be a local regulator, and then over time tune those regulations to get to the, I believe, pretty high level of agreement we have about how it should work. You should legislate your fears, not legislate your hopes, not your fears. You have to listen to your fears and try to deal with them, but legislate for the condition that we want. And I think there's a fairly high level of agreement, a lot of people of goodwill in this room, about what we want. Now, I asked our city attorney this earlier. I'm partially reassured by his answer, but we have been in situations where the city lost out on its ability to be an effective regulator because of conflict with state agencies. And so I'm trying to lean towards regulation, not because I want us to be a really tough regulator here, because I don't want to be back in the position that we've been in with the lottery and the OLCC. And anybody who's dealt with those issues, you have too, know how vexing that's been to our neighborhoods. So I'm trying to be, my strategy here is to be a little more of a regulator for now and make sure that we tune it and get it right. I don't think that's going to be that hard.
I'm willing to go along here, and with the commitment that we revisit this in 4 or 5 weeks. I have a disadvantage. I was not here at the last week because it was a Jewish holiday, so I totally lost all that discussion and results, and so I'm willing to concede that I may be missing something here. But I also think that, I'm hoping this commitment to look at not only the siting issue, but I do think there was some testimony about the fees, and my fear is that we're doing this all on a cost of service, but it's really hard to size down on a cost of service basis.
So just as a point of clarification, it's somewhat apples to oranges to compare the proposed fee schedule here with liquor licenses, because that is, on the liquor license side, a particularly vexatious state preemption where they have told us we can't charge anymore.
We're making some implicit assumptions about the extent to which we need to regulate this industry, which could be totally unfounded after this thing's been unleashed for a while. But, we're still going to need to support the positions that we're funding, because that's just what we do.
They'll be fee-funded positions.
Not indefinitely. My philosophy is, if we find out we're over-regulating and we don't need that many regulators, we will have less of them.
Right. Let me support my friend Dan Saltzman on this point. I'm interested in knowing whether we should expand the hours of operation. I'm interested in knowing whether we should be an early adopter of a single unitary permit, not two. I accept the spirit of the Margolis amendments. I just don't know how they essentially work within it, so I'd like to know what you like and don't like about that. And I'm open to liberalizing the 1,000-foot rule to make sure that whatever the criteria we pick doesn't exclude someone who, equitably, we think should be protected just because on a date certain they didn't have their license. I want to make sure, the thing that Mr. Sugarman talked about, I want to make sure that the definition doesn't arbitrarily exclude someone who otherwise is a sympathetic figure, in our view. And I will join with you in asking and looking at all those points, Dan. I just think we should adopt this now. We have a commitment to come back. And then hopefully the final hearing will be the final hearing.
Okay. I'm just asking for a broader commitment at the relook.
So, Mayor, I move the question. 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. So the question's been moved. After we vote, I will consult with the clerk right here and now and see if we've got a date we can name as a time certain. So let's take a vote, please, on the amended ordinance.
Saltzman?
As I said, I'm going to support this today. I appreciate the commitment to look at these issues, but and these is plural, so it's not just the siting. It also is the issues around fees, hours of operation, other things that have been raised. Get everybody in the room, and then let's hopefully have a unified front. So thanks for this discussion and testimony. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. I greatly appreciate that. That's significant. I'm going to request, Mayor, that you don't work on the time certain for right now. I'm going to work with staff to do that. My goal actually would be to get it back to council by the 21st of October, which would then allow us to be looking to get any ordinance adopted before December 1st. Because we are, as I said before, we are planning to come back with our proposal for how we're going to roll out the licensing and many other aspects. This is something we're going to work through together. Okay. And with ONI's famed public process, I became the commissioner in charge of neighborhood involvement on July 15th. This proposal, part of it was supposed to come back at the end of July. I decided that we would wait and bring the whole package back together after an extensive public process over the summer. I greatly appreciate Teresa Marchetti and Victor Salinas and Ben Walters, our city attorney, for your work on this, and I appreciate all of the community involvement. This is going to be an ongoing thing. It's not one and done. It's not even going to be 10 and done, I don't think. We're going to continue to work on it. Commissioner Fish, I know you're late for an appointment. Happy birthday. Thank you for staying.
Happy birthday.
Aye.
Happy birthday.
Yep.
fish.
You know, I talked to a couple of people at the last hearing who had come in all very frustrated with the process and weren't sure they were going to be heard, and were pleasantly surprised that council members engaged their concerns, raised questions, you know, did follow-up. And I just have to say, in my experience on this body, that happens more often than not. We are up here sincerely trying to get to the right outcome, and we sometimes get it wrong. But when people come and testify earnestly and marshal facts and make arguments, I hope more often than not people feel heard. There's a difference, by the way, to always getting what you want. I mean, I know that. I've been married for 25 years. I have kids. I don't always get what I want. But everyone expects to be heard respectfully, and I hope people feel heard, because I've learned a lot through this process. The people coming forward and testifying have made an impact, huge impact, on how this has evolved. So credit to you for taking time to help us get it right. The only thing left for me is whatever the ONI public process, and Commissioner Fritz is, you know, could write the book on that, I'm expecting Ben, that there will, Ben Walters, Ben?
He had another appointment.
It's right here.
He's still there.
So just give me a second, sir. I got to talk to my counsel. I'm expecting
other counsel.
That there will be a meeting co-convened by ONI and our legal team, Rose Room, or wherever you want to do it, where people can, who have language concerns can come in and run it up the flagpole. That's different than having a public hearing and any other kind of feedback, but I want to make sure that people, because we're getting into the really refined stuff here, and I ultimately want to be able to ask Ben Wall, our attorney, what's the difference between this language and that language? So I'm expecting there will be at least one meeting where people can come with their proposed changes, and they can get some feedback from staff, and legal can take a look at it so that we get that advice. And that's separate from any other public process, and that's the basis upon which I'm going to vote aye. And I really appreciate this debate and discussion, because I think it's been actually very productive, and I think we're getting to the right place. Aye.
Like I've said enough, I'm looking forward to that process and to getting back to this informal council session. Aye.
Thank you very much.
And now, do we want to set a date? You're saying don't, but my expectation is similar to Commissioner Fish, which is that there will be these discussions about language between staff and interested parties, and that we will return to the language of the regulations in council, so that Commissioner Saltzman and the rest of us that still have concerns about issues like fees and hours will be able to address those.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Has everybody got that understanding?
You voted aye already.
I have voted aye.
So if I may say, yes, we will do that and more. All this and better we shall do. There's a lot more to be discussed on this issue, and I will try to avoid, to the extent practicable, as I always do, to have further emergency ordinances, because it's better when we have more time to deliberate. Thank you.
Thank you all. We recess till 2 o'clock.
Happy birthday!
Thank you.
One more item. Thank you.
Thank you.